If it's new now or next in cannabis, you'll find it on Cannabis Today. Cannabis Today delivers industry, community, culture, and news media. To find more of the Cannabis Today content most relevant to you, visit canna-today.com and filter content by categories like topics, hosts, locations, and more. To support the podcast, visit cannapatrons.com. To learn more about advertising, sponsorship, and other strategic partnerships, contact us today. On this edition of the podcast, Catherine Sidman hosts Dr. Jerry King live from the show floor of Concentration 2019 in Pala, California. Dr. King has over 50 years of experience in the fields of chemistry, chemical engineering, and food technology. He has worked in government, industrial, academic, and consulting environments. Dr. King has published over 265 documents, including government reports, and holds 3 patents. He is world-renowned for his expertise and contributions to supercritical fluid, CO2 technology, in the fields of food, botanical, and natural product processing, as well as analytical chemistry and materials science. Since 2013, Dr. King has had a laser-sharp focus on consulting and R&D related to the cannabis industry. He is a recognized expert in the fields of extraction, chemistry, and latest CO2 technology, and has made numerous presentations at many cannabis and hemp conferences. Dr. King is enthusiastic to offer his tremendous experience to the cannabis and hemp industry. Without further ado, Catherine Sidman and Dr. Jerry King live from the show floor of Concentration 2019 in Pala, California.
Okay. Well, primarily, my name's Jerry King, and my primary connection with this, field is through processing, particularly extraction technology, and particularly carbon dioxide extraction that you probably heard of. And as John McKay said in some of his comments, I've been involved in CO2 processing and work since about 1968 as a student. So that's about 55 years now, Cannabis came to me, actually. I thought I was retiring out of, say, an academic position in 2012, and people started, consulting Google and other, media of that type, and I started getting phone calls and email inquiries. Yeah. I was at the University of Arkansas until 2012
as a professor
in chemical engineering, and then I didn't know what the world held for me after retirement, but cannabis came my way, and it had a synchrony with my technical specialty. And so here I am in 2019, pretty fully embedded in the field.
Do you prefer professor or doctor?
Either one or just Jerry.
Hardly just Jerry. Okay. Darwin, are you about to go have lunch? What is your schedule like? Okay, I don't know what time it is now. After your panel, would you come to me, or do you need to eat lunch? Okay, great. I just finished mine, so same. All right.
Paul, are our levels good?
All right. Thank you for joining us today on the Cannabis Today podcast. I'm Catherine Sidman from Cascade Sciences, and we're here at the Concentration 2019 conference on the showroom floor, and I am with Dr. Jerry King. I asked if he preferred doctor or professor, and he said Jerry. But I want you to know he's a doctor and a professor. Jerry, tell the listeners a little bit what you were just telling me about your experience in the industry and your experience outside of cannabis that makes you uniquely fit to spend your retirement with us.
Okay. Well, I am probably best known for work or R&D type things in the area of extraction processing and some analytical chemistry, including the technique of chromatography. So I'm kind of a collage of experiences that embrace chemistry, where my formal degree was taken in physical analytical chemistry. And then through industrial employment, particularly in the food industry and natural products processing, I got into applied chemical engineering and food engineering type things. I'm probably, as I say, best known for work in using carbon dioxide as an extraction medium because of its natural state. And that is also the appeal it has to the cannabis processing area.
And you began using CO2 in processing for food and fragrance in 1968, you said?
I would say, yeah, I think it would go back that far in truth. Particularly throughout the 1970s, I held a couple of industrial positions that reinforced that thing, particularly in the natural products and food processing area. And then in 1986, I got sort of a considerable break. I got employed by the USDA R&D lab in Peoria, Illinois, where I ran the high-pressure supercritical fluid operation. And we had a binary program there. One was to develop friendly processing to replace organic solvents, particularly as they pertain to vegetable oil processing. The other thing was to replace organic solvents in the lab, where copious amounts of organic solvents were being used, particularly in the area of trace analysis of pesticides in, of all things, meat products. So there was a synergy between these two parallel tracks of research throughout my 16 and a half years.
So you were with the USDA, and they were actively researching replacing solvent extraction techniques in food and pharmaceuticals with non-solvent, and in this case, CO2.
CO2 processing, yep.
That's interesting.
And
was that mostly from a health and safety aspect for the operators? Was it health and safety for consumers? What was the purpose of
both,
the USDA?
Both. There had been some explosions of hexane oilseed processing plants that really catalyzed the research in the early 80s. They took it over from a gentleman who retired, carried it a lot of different ways, including even the analytical option and so forth. We also, in that position, I helped some companies develop instrumentation, particularly in the analytical field, and I worked, in non-paid consulting because as a government employee, assisting industry and integrating in the process. We were never successful in getting oil seeds because of the vast quantities that needed to be processed, the CO2 technology integrated in, but there was a lot of spill-offs of the work, and I became well-known in the area and that type of thing, published quite a bit, 200-some publications.
And when did you begin teaching?
I actually began teaching in 2005, formerly at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. And chemical engineer was a bit of a sconce for me. I mean, it was a field that my formal degree wasn't in, but primarily I taught separations technology there, and also polymer science, which I have a background in.
And they're kind of almost the opposite things. I mean, separation technology and polymers, so that the combined and separated.
There are
right?
a lot of polymers used in separations, like membranes, and so it's not that far afield.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But certainly, like in the cannabis area, the specification of packaging and so forth, polymer science plays a role in terms of what's best, what wouldn't leach into your end product.
Right, right. And so you were just going on about your own, minding your own business, teaching at the University of Arkansas, and the cannabis industry came and said, we've got a plan for your retirement. How did that happen? So you didn't seek out cannabis.
No, I didn't seek out cannabis.
It was not on your radar in Arkansas, was it?
It wasn't on my radar. And again, it was because of this commonality with the CO2 processing. It came to me, And then, I became kind of fascinated by the technology challenges in the field, of which there are many.
Can you tell us what a few of those are?
Okay. Well, one of the things I'm passionate about is we really need more, I'll call it fundamental physical chemical data on cannabinoids and terpenes. There are things that have been explored in the literature, like there's a fair amount of information of that type from the aromatherapy area because terpenes are in lavender oil and some of these healthy aroma oils. On the other hand, cannabinoids, the lack of data is very serious in this case. And one of the problems I think we face in this area is we need to be able to use these quantities beyond milligrams, small levels, to develop this physical chemical database. And so I think a lot of the R&D is locked down in the United States because of this regulation, you know, that is rather onerous, you know, on simply safely containing, you know, cannabis, that kind of thing. You know?
Sure.
So that's one area.
Well, so definitely the illegality of it on a federal level has precluded research.
Yeah.
And in even in states like Colorado, California, the university systems, which are dependent on federal dollars, are not inclined to enter into that gray area.
Exactly.
So we really do lack we lack that research and we lack that information. Yeah. How do you see that getting remedied? Will it be international research, Israel, Colombia? Yeah. Oh, it'll be you. So you're pointing at yourself,
well,
Dr. Jerry.
In 2019, I've been on a continuous travel log. I do short course type things, and I worked with a woman professor at Loyalist College in Ontario. So I went across the border to Canada. And Canada's been good to me. I serve as a consultant with like a company called MetaPharma Labs north of Toronto.
MetaPharm, a little company known as MetaPharm Labs. And in the spirit of full disclosure, they're also my customer, so I supply them their laboratory equipment, all those big blue ovens.
All right.
So we have friends in common.
Okay. And Loyalist was in Belleville, Ontario. I also deal with a company called Applied Extraction Systems, or AESI, which is in Prince Edward Island. I also was what's called a visiting Fulbright professor in 2015 at the University of Alberta. And what led from that experience is serving as an industrial mentor or liaison in their chemical engineering department there in the University of Alberta in Edmonton, teaching R&D senior design teams on how to model cannabis processing. So this educational part, you know, through the Loyalist College. But as I was going to say, in 2019, I started with a two-week extraction course there at Loyalist. And then I was in New Zealand for 9 weeks. Because they're going to legalize at least medical cannabis there.
Australia's coming online as well.
And I spent 9 weeks at an industrial government company called Callahan Innovation in Wellington. And we toured the North and South Islands, and I got to see beautiful New Zealand during that time. But to visit with growers, they're particularly focused strictly on hemp and CBD, and also the oil seed, the hemp oil seed. And this also involved indigenous people, the Morai people who are, you know, planning to start businesses in this area. And then we had a workshop in Wellington. So from there, I went back home for about a week and went to Ciudad Real, Spain, and was an invited speaker there. And then I went back for 4 days, and I went to Shanghai, China, and talked about supercritical chromatography and all the chromatography support things in the cannabis area.
Well, chromatography is a huge... I have people who 6 months ago didn't know what chromatography was, throwing around terminology like CRC with absolutely no qualms now. Yeah. Tell me a little bit, since that's really more of an emerging technology for extraction, tell me where we are in terms of the availability, the scalability, the efficacy, CapEx versus OpEx. I mean, how does chromatography sit in with its peers in extraction?
Okay. Well, chromatography, I think, is on the the tail end of the purification process. I think it's fair to say, although it's hard to pin down right now data on CapEx and OpEx thing, it's an expensive thing to scale up and to implement. And so there are a number of competing technologies all the way from columnar chromatography to countercurrent chromatography to something called simulated moving bed chromatography, which is pretty elegant and expensive to implement. And also centrifugal partition chromatography.
Mm-hmm.
So all these are competing in the cannabis space, you know, and companies now are, you know, evaluating them. And these are particularly companies like MetaFarm that we were talking about that have an interest in getting into high purity pharmaceutical grade cannabinoid single entity materials. So we're taking, you know, the concentrates from whatever extraction process you're using it and taking it into almost single pure compound purifications via chromatography. But some of this chromatography, I think, also will be done by simple sorbent-based technologies, mm-hmm, such as silica, mm-hmm, maybe activated carbon, mm-hmm, one-pass systems.
Alumina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Alumina, mm-hmm, it would
Alumina.
Be a good example.
Sure.
Yeah.
And specifically there, we're talking about specific remediation of
removal of THC.
Color, yeah. THC. So you're separating. Now, once you've removed that THC through chromatography, can you get it back?
Remove. Say that,
I mean, you use the chromatography column. It catches the THC.
Mm. Yeah.
Can you wash it out of there and collect that THC?
Yeah, you better be able to,
yes,
you know, or you'll have quite an expensive bill in adsorbent technology.
Yes, yes.
Now, some people don't like the idea of silica because of the need to reclaim it or to eventually dispose of it. That's mm-hmm. where centrifugal partition chromatography is seen as a viable. The only problem there is eventually the way that works mechanistically is you have to have some kind of nonpolar organic solvent. So you're back to the solvent.
So we're back to where we started.
So if it can be made to work perfectly, which is a tall order, a supercritical fluid chromatography with, say, eluents that are 95% compressed CO2 and maybe 5% ethanol would be, you know, looked upon very favorably.
As a chemical engineer, I imagine that you look at this plant as sort of this combination of all these constituents that you want to parse apart and get into and research. How is that mindset compare with a lot of what you hear from people who are in the cannabis industry who want to keep it all together, who want to preserve the plant and be true to the plant? Tell me about how you feel like that push and pull happens in this industry.
Well, in all confession, I'm not a marijuana user ever, except maybe for peripheral neuropathy and, you know, my lower extremities. But I'm a deconstructor. That, in a sense of the word, is what a lot of us are involved in, this fractionation of cannabis and so forth. However, you've got to deconstruct to reconstruct.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, to get more
to
effective
understand.
Products.
How
to
do you understand something that
right.
you don't take
right.
apart, right?
You know, if you're going to look at the effects of individual terpene bouquets, you know, or even, you know, strains of cannabis with their colorful names and everything, to really gain a true appreciation medically, particularly, you have to deconstruct and then take the best of that and put it back together, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll ever get away from the use of the natural product. But I think everything is trending and leaning toward some form, at least preliminary deconstruction, which is really what concentration, mm-hmm. in the sense of the word,
mm-hmm.
is. You're trying to keep all of the components, you know, vital to the recreational and medical use of the plant together, and that's a difficult challenge to do. But I think, you know, we're going to go from granulated cannabis as a method of delivering medical or recreational benefits to really the area of concentrates and
finished products, novel
products of that type.
On a personal level, how are you surprised if I had come 10 years ago into your office at the University of Arkansas and said, Dr. King, you're going to be at a cannabis conference in 10 years? What would you have said?
I wouldn't have imagined it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the honest truth.
Yeah. And how have you found it? Have you found that over your, so you've seen over your lifetime the full spectrum of prohibition,
yeah,
and really active prohibition You know, in terms of the drug war, in terms of the stigmatization, the reefer madness, you know, that whole thing. You've seen that. And now here you are on the floor of the Concentration 2019 conference. Is anybody around here as scary as they had you all set up to think that that cannabis was? What are your reflections on as a culture, how we've done with this plant over the last 50 years or so?
50 years. So
yeah.
That's a big increment of time. I think it's come by a realization that it's not the villainous, you know, botanical substrate, if that's an elegant way of putting it, that it's been typecast at. Even decades, or maybe not decades, centuries before, you know, it was obviously being consumed and used to people's benefit. And ultimately, I look at it, is it any worse than the toxins, ethanol, like excessive drinking, or tobacco with nicotine and so forth, which I see as perturbation agents on your natural health. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, and I think that what we're seeing too, and I find it interesting because I, in my personal life, where I try to be sort of an ambassador for cannabis a little bit, you know, in my church family, when I've got my friends that are in their 70s or their 80s, and like you were saying, with neuropathy in your legs, with knees and pain, introducing somebody to CBD that's bioavailable can have a huge impact.
Yeah, and, you know, I have an aging spouse where I see that benefit.
Yeah.
You asked about my first contact in here. It was probably I was in Boston, Massachusetts, getting my Ph.D., where there was a certain counterculture prevalent at the time, anti-war, for example.
Right. So this is probably in the early to mid-60s, maybe?
Later in the 60s, I would say. And that's where you know, I became more aware of the utilization of cannabis and so forth. And it's unfortunate that still people today, you know, in the stigmatization issue and this and that, identify the use with that particular time and space, you know.
Because that's just a very small, that's just one facet of the jewel, you know, and it's one simple thing. I found that, so I came from the laboratory equipment industry, so I was selling into aerospace, pharma, electronics, and cannabis found us. I started getting phone calls that didn't sound from the purchasing arm of NASA Langley, right? Yeah. And that's how we got into the industry, similar to you. And it was very, very interesting because at that time, so I'm talking about 2010, 2011, before any adult use legislation had been passed, just having access to the proper tools to do the work that these folks wanted to do was huge. Yeah. Yeah. And now, you know, I'm seeing equipment manufacturers throwing their doors open and being really responsive. Are you seeing more industrial tools relevant to cannabis that people are able to access now?
Oh, yeah. The handcuffs are off. And
they're not off everybody.
Yeah. But on 2012 and 2013, I became aware that the analytical instrument manufacturers, suppliers, there was difficulty in getting supplies into the industry. And through one of these initial contacts, Emerald Scientific, for instance.
Oh, Emerald is great. That was a great company.
The result was that I became aware there was this sort of incognito marketing of lab supplies, solvents, et cetera, into the industry through intermediaries like Emerald in this case. And Emerald was kind enough with myself and John McKay to sponsor a video series that's, from what I gather in talking with people, has been very helpful. So again, it's an educational component, but webinars didn't exist when I started out as a technical person. Now they're a very widely popular media for transmitting knowledge.
Imagine if you were a young PhD student today.
Yeah.
With access to the internet, access to just so much more. Speak to that young PhD student. What do you wish that you had at your disposal that they have all over the place now?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one to say, because communication in my PhD, you know, degree, which was 1973 and everything. For example, our thesis were done by typewriter.
Right.
So I think the software computer evolution, which is then linked with, audio visual improvements, it's almost overwhelming to a bit of an old timer like me that we have these communication tools available. And what I'm seeing more and more is, the webinar is becoming a standard way of communicating knowledge that didn't exist back, 30, 40 mm-hmm. years ago.
And having that. So how can the listeners today find you? How can they find your webinars? How can they be in touch with you? How are you available, Dr. Jerry King?
Well, I don't actually have a URL.
Uh-huh.
I need to perhaps address that in something. I have a beginning sort of consulting company. But what I try to do is to avail myself through conferences. I've spoken at Emerald Scientific's, conference mm-hmm. in San Diego. I've spoken at MJ Biz. I'll be speaking, I guess, in two more weeks at what's called the World Cannabis Congress or whatever in St. John's, New Brunswick, I think is where it's going to be done. And then I will be going to... South Korea, they've legitimized, apparently, to some degree, medical cannabis starting in March. So they've asked me to come for a week and speak at two universities and meet with a company. And then I go back again across the international dateline to Melbourne, Australia, to a food engineering conference. And the subject of my talk there is essentially integrating cannabis processing technology and products into food products,
wow.
which is a very controversial area in terms of infusible products. And
yeah, it is. I mean, legally, we don't know how the FDA is going to handle it. Mm-hmm. They're having hearings right now at the FDA
right.
talking about how to handle GW Pharma and what's a medication and what's an active pharmaceutical ingredient. We're trying to figure it out.
Yeah. And I've just recently published an article in Current Topics in Food Science toward that end. So I could do a little better on the publishing end, too.
I think you're doing pretty great. Yeah. I think you're doing pretty great.
Yeah.
Dr. King, thank you for joining us on the Cannabis Today podcast. It's been my great pleasure.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
To contact Dr. Jerry King, email jwking1@uark.edu. As always, please rate, review, subscribe, and share. Thanks again for listening to the Cannabis Today podcast.